You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Mallory Kirsten, and we talk about when and how she decided to both choose a career as a teacher and then further down the line, choose not to be a teacher. Now, I myself have never been a teacher. Very thankful for all the teachers in my life and in the lives of my stepkids and kids. Very thank you. Very thankful. Thank you very much. We also talk about what she decided to do next and how that changed her life. So if you're ready, let's do it. Mallory Kirsten, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, it's great to be here.
I'm glad you're here. Are you ready for a chat today?
Yeah, totally. Let's do this.
Let's do it. All right. So I start most of my interviews by asking people where they are. So where do you call home these days?
I'm in Colorado, just outside of Denver.
Oh, nice. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. One of the great, fun places to be. So I love that. I'd love to begin by giving people a chance to get to know you a little bit outside of your profession and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit about who are the people in your life or your pets or your hobbies, just something a little bit about you, just to get to know you a little tiny bit?
Yeah. So I live in a cute little apartment with my partner. We've been together 14 years. I'm a wonderful doggy aunt to several doggies out there. I'm a dog lover. Well, I'm just an animal lover in general. Okay. So, yeah. But I don't have any pets of my own yet. I want a home with the backyard and they can run around and play in.
That is very nice. That is very nice. I actually grew up in an apartment in a city and we had a giant dog. And it's one of those things, not like giant, giant like St. Bernard, but big dog. And it's one of those situations where it made perfect sense to me as a child. But then when I got to be an adult, I did go back and ask my father. I was like, what was the deal with this? Because that seemed like that was a strange decision to make. And it was, it was directly tied to the fact that I was going outside and I had the dog with me. He was like, if I was going to let you, wander, I wanted you to have this large animal by your side. And I was like, oh, I get it. So that is, but I respect that about wanting to have a good place for the animal to be. I think that's very good. It's nice to have the respect of the commitment. Okay, to get to the topic of the day, because I'm already off track, is deciding how you decided to leave your profession as a middle school teacher and then what you decided to do after that. Does that sound like a fun conversation?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Now, so let's back up way back in time. How did you decide that you wanted to be a teacher? Like, how did that happen?
Well, I come from a family of teachers. So my aunt was a teacher, retired now. Stepmom was a teacher, also retired. And my mom was a teacher, also retired. And so I kind of just, it seemed like a natural next step for me. I always loved school. I was the biggest nerd. I loved learning new things. I loved having conversations with teachers because they would always just have the best book recommendations and, that kind of stuff. And so I just loved school. So it seemed like a logical next step. And what had actually occurred was I had just graduated college and I was still working at Starbucks as a barista there. And I was experiencing some challenges like moving up in the company, which was interesting because I thought I was really great at what I was doing. And but the manager I had at the time wasn't in agreement, but the manager I had in another one was like, if you want to go, like, you're next in line, if you want to go up to shift supervisor, and up and above, like, I'm here for it. You are trainable. You listen, like, you're amazing. So I had one manager singing my praises and one who just didn't like me for some reason, I think. And then I had the experience of, this was before I started my teaching credential program. I started having problems with my shoulder. And the manager, who didn't like me too much, wasn't super willing to work with me. So the shoulder just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And like
And so
literally,
the
could you just.
shoulder was, so it was coming in, it was like it wasn't just pain, it was that you couldn't do things at work or it
Yeah,
hurt
so that
or.
like repetitive motion of the pumping, like especially those thick
Sure.
syrups, like it just took a toll. It still occasionally actually flares up. Yeah, I was just experiencing a lot of pain, and so I was asking, can you just plant me at register? And I can push the buttons with my other hand, I can take money, and you know, and she just wouldn't do that for me.
Okay.
Wipe counters left-handed, you know, like, so I was like, I can't do this. This is the only thing. I have a college degree now, and this is the only thing that I feel like I can do. Like, what is going on? So the next logical step was to get a teaching credential, or at least that's what I thought at the time. And I ended up transferring stores back to the one where the manager did like me. And she did plant me for like a month at the register. And then my shoulder was fine
Oh.
after a month of being at the register. So I was like, so I have options now. I can continue to move up with Starbucks, or I can further my education and get a teaching credential. And I said, well, there are more benefits, you know, you
Yeah.
get better health insurance, you get those things with Starbucks too, or you did. I don't know if that's still the case, but I was like, let me just do this. My family loves it. I'm sure I'll love it too. And there were certainly aspects of it that I did love. So I taught middle school, which some would say is the
Yeah.
most challenging. Most people are like bred for like elementary or for high school. The middle
Yeah.
ages, it takes a pretty special breed of human
I
to
am
enjoy,
in,
I
that was
think.
the next thing I was going to ask you because I admit that I am in awe of the people who choose to be on purpose in with the middle schoolers. I think that that's a, I think that that's a really specialized group. It's just it's a tough part of like growing up. It's a tough, I mean.
I would say that high school was tougher for me growing up.
Okay.
Middle school was actually my favorite time when I was in school, because what I
Really?
loved was, yeah, because what I loved about it, for me, it was all personal. Of course, there's mean, you know, I didn't really actually have too many problems with mean girl type things, because most of the time people would say, oh my gosh, so and so is gossiping about you, and I'd look at them and be like, that's not my business. So like I really just didn't care, because I was doing so much other stuff that I loved. And what I loved about middle school was everything's kind of scheduled in such a way that you can go be on the volleyball team, which I did do in 8th grade. I tried it and I loved it. It was so much fun. But I also could do winter percussion. I could also do drama. Like I could do everything that I was passionate about. And it
Yeah,
was no problem.
that's
Yeah.
good.
And then you
No,
just like you
it's
get to high
the
school and
yeah.
it's more intense and you have to start making choices. And I
Oh, that's
hated
fair. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah,
that.
the thing about middle school is definitely the drama, and I'm not a high drama. I'm not a high drama llama, but just the awareness of that, and just that it's really the shift. You know, elementary school, you don't, you can't, you're not aware of anything past the end of your nose, and then you just become aware of the fact that other people are around and paying attention and the gossip and all the things, and just everything feels like it's an emergency. In that's the way I
Yeah.
remember it. You know, I desperately remember having like a discussion with my dad saying, you know, if something doesn't happen, clearly my life was going to end if I was not allowed to do whatever it is, what I was asking, you know, watch a movie or whatever. And so, and to be, and then there's four kids that have gone through my house, and each and every one of them, the middle school years, just like, oh my gosh, like it's a lot of energy and a lot of emotions. And so you get props from me. So you chose it. You chose it from the outset. You said, I want to be in middle school. God bless you. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Well, because
what
I
were
already
your,
knew I
go
didn't
ahead.
want to teach science, math. I didn't want to teach science and math for sure. And especially when Common Core guidelines started coming in and there was this different way of teaching math, I was like, oh, wow, I'm really glad I'm
Yeah.
not a math teacher.
I lived that. I lived that with my kids. I did. My son in elementary school, one of my kids got an assignment and it was single digit subtraction or addition. And there was a question. It was like, why? Why is this the answer? And we're sitting at the dining room table and I was like, math? I don't like what is who no one has ever asked me ever in my life the
Because
reason.
someone told me this was the answer and this is how you do it.
And
That's why.
the other thing is we'd move to these paper back textbooks. So like the worksheets would come home, but I had not yet implemented go buy an extra book. So I couldn't see the lessons. I could only see the assignments with him. And what they were actually looking for was like the vocabulary from like the rules of math or whatever, which I didn't learn
Makes
until I'm not
sense.
sure I ever learned, but if I learned it, it was high school and college. And so he still remembers it. He's like, the day you sent me to school with the answer of subtraction. I don't like, what is the rule? Like, what are you looking for here? So anyway, I always knew that there would be a point where, that would get hard. To help the kids. I just didn't think that it would be second grade math. but those are the funny things. So what were your hopes and dreams? So you didn't want to be a STEM teacher. You didn't want to be science and math. What were your hopes and dreams before you started being a middle school teacher? What did you think it would be like? You wanted consistency and benefits and maybe somebody who wasn't a manager like your Starbucks manager. What else?
Yeah, I think I probably lost a little bit sight of my creative aspects because I grew up, I loved writing and I knew that there was a part of me that wanted to be a writer and I wanted to write children's books and I wanted for a while to be like the next J.K. Rowling, like have a fantastical, magical world that I've created that people want to live in their everyday life kind of thing. And I lost sight of that because suddenly it was like graduated. And it took me a little longer because again, you have to make choices in college about what you study. And so I tried several different majors for a while. And so I think I was 23 when I finally graduated college. And then I'm set with, oh, I have to like make money and be able to pay rent. And like, what do I do? And so I think that was more my hopes and dreams at the time. And I thought that maybe if I taught English, and then I ended up getting a second single subject in history as well. So I taught both English and history over my time in middle school. And I thought, well, this is a great way to get to know my demographic that I wanted to write for. And I don't know, it was really funny. What you're supposed to do when you do the single subject is that you're supposed to student teach in a middle school and you're supposed to student teach in a high school. And I did my middle school placement first, and I did a special request with my credentialing program and said, can I please do my second placement here? Please, 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 can I do my second placement here? And because I got along so well with the other teachers, the school itself was just, the kids were great. I just really enjoyed it a lot. And I thought, wow, yeah, I can do this. And was heartbroken at the end of the year because this was at the end of the year, school year for them. So I was there not required, but I showed up to their graduation to say goodbye to them and, all that stuff. And then I think I spent a year subbing, like doing more long-term subbings at different schools. Then I had my own classroom for a year. That was hard. Administration at that school wasn't super supportive. And they tried to give me tips and stuff. Like, I was willing to try anything for helping, like with behavioral management and all that kind of stuff. But they were giving me a lot of feedback that made sense for elementary school, which was their background. And I was like, how do you not know that that doesn't work for middle schoolers?
Fair enough.
And it wasn't for lack of trying. I definitely tried. And so it was 2 years away from that school where I student taught. And then I was able to actually circle back. And I did a long-term sub at that school. And then finally was hired on. I went to, I think, like three interviews to get at that school that I had student taught at. And finally, after I think like my third or fourth interview, I got it. And I was just ecstatic. I was so excited to be able to work with the very same teachers that I student taught with, that, taught me all my foundations, that, and they're just amazing people.
Yeah. That sounds really good. So, your dreams were before you started teaching that you wanted to be grown up and be able to pay your bills and do those things. And then maybe there was an undercurrent of you thought that you would be teaching and in this space and it would be prep for what your earlier dreams of being a young adult novelist might be helping. Oh, that sounds like fun. That sounds like so much fun. All right. So I have never been a school teacher. I will admit that even as a young child, it looked to me like a very hard job. And I'm very thankful for all the people who do it for all of my kids. Never more so than we were, that was this confirmed than when we were all homeschooling during lockdown. And so let's talk about, so did your expectations, it sounds like you had a little bit of a rocky road finding a school where you fit and you felt like you were gonna be happy. And then was there alignment between what you thought the job would be like and what it actually worked out to be like, or was it different?
It was pretty much what I thought it was going to be like. And I think the surprise being that, you instantly have a connection with the students who love to learn. Like the ones who are probably a little bit most like you, maybe, or, you have an instant one. And then it was really interesting for me when, like, the end of the year would come, and that, those couple kids that like drove you nuts the entire year would be the ones that I would kind of be the saddest about leaving. It's like it's just, yeah. And I loved the part where, the kids that, I had a kid once just like pick up the hole puncher, like the student hole puncher, and made it snow
Okay.
on purpose, made it snow.
But I mean, listen, it would be interesting in the classroom. That's the kind of person that is fun to have in a classroom. As somebody who never wanted to be a teacher, I find that very enjoyable, but I also didn't have to clean it up.
Right. Well, and technically I didn't either. I did my best because I don't like to leave that kind of stuff for the janitorial staff all the time. But it's just like, they're usually so happy because they're so used to kind of like getting yelled at for those things or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really great to have that interpersonal connection with them, to be like, no, I like you. I like the human that's right in front of me. I think you're amazing, and I think you're going to grow up and be an amazing human. I didn't particularly like this behavior
Yeah.
because now
Yeah.
there's a mess, and now somebody else has to clean it up, and that's not fair. And they understand that. They don't have the impulse control quite yet because they're in that stage between elementary and high school. They don't have the impulse control yet, but they have the reasoning capabilities that you can say stuff like that, and you're like, yeah, I'm not sure why I did that.
Yeah.
You
There's
know?
a really great book by a guy whose name is Alan Price. Adam Price or Alan, it's called He's Not Lazy. And I think it's helpful for all the genders, not just boys, but he points out, and he's got degrees in all kind of things, but he says that this age, like the kids that are adolescents, they get such a heavy stream of negativity directed at them. And it's like a shift, because when you're in elementary school, it's like, yay, you wrote your name. Congratulations. Here's all the praise. And then you get to middle school, and it's a big shift. Your parents, all the adults in your life, are like, wow, you're really not doing what we want you to do. And it becomes like a fire hose of negativity. And the adults around you are not always aware of it. And he's a big proponent of make sure that you separate your feelings about the person
Right.
from the behaviors that you're doing, and also that you introduce to them what you want them to do. Like, it's like, hey, you did this. It's nothing about you, but can we clean it up? Would you like to help me clean it up? Would you like to join me in the activity of cleaning it up?
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work with big kids the way it does with little kids who are like, yeah, let's sweep. So that's very cool. So how long were you a teacher?
I was a teacher for about 5 years.
5 years. Very,
I
very nice.
literally got, this is the funny part, is that I literally got permanent status at the school that with the, like, I
Everything.
had the dream. It was like here. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is what I want.
Okay. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And how long ago was it that you came to that realization that you weren't sure you wanted to do it?
Yeah, it was 2017, and when I had that sort of kind of handed to me, the people in that administration left for other schools that were closer to them. They were commuting, I think, something stupid like an hour each way. So they left for schools that were closer to them, and that was an administration that I felt super supported by. And I was like, okay. So I have permanent status. This was everything that I asked for. Now this administration is leaving. And we don't know what we're going to get. And it was a pretty quick decision because I think by June 30th, the kids graduate, June 3rd or whatever. And by June 30th, you kind of need to let them know that you're not planning on coming back.
Okay.
So it was a pretty quick decision, although it was still a hard decision.
So it sounds like there were two things running in the back of your mind. One is, and I guess we should loop, we should let me give you a chance to talk about this. You mentioned a couple of times the role of the administration and how you felt in your job. And so talk a little bit about how the administrations in your schools, how does it shape the experience of the teachers? I have never been a teacher, so I can't speak to that. I know that I've been in schools where the administration changed, and it changed the parental experience for sure, because it's different people. But what's the impact of an administration or administrators on the experience of teaching, of being an employee?
I can have a really impact, a big impact on feeling, just feeling supported. Because sometimes it can feel really isolating, because you are the only adult in the room
Okay. Like
for the
when you're
majority
with
of
the
the day.
kids, like, so you're with
Yeah,
the kids
when
and
you're
you're
in the
the one
kids with
adult.
the
Okay.
kids.
Yep.
And I think there's something super special for the type of principal slash vice principal who, when they're doing your observations, you can feel from them whether they're trying to nitpick everything that you're doing, or they're just like, where's the opening for, oh, you could have developed this a little bit more, or you could have talked about this idea a little bit more, versus like constructive feedback versus looking for the things that they want to nab you for, kind of thing. You
Okay.
feel the difference. And when you feel
So,
supported and it feels like a co-creative place, then I think it impacts everything. It impacts the teacher. So I want to be better. And then in turn, I am better. And then the kids have a better experience. And the better experience the kids have, they reciprocate that back. And it creates an entire culture.
Okay, so I think I get it. So, because the feedback loop in a school, I think, is different from other places, partially because of what you said. You're on your own with the kids when that's happening, and then, you're evaluated based on things that are not entirely within your control, right? And all of those things. So, but yeah, so that's the impact of the administration. And then the other thing that was going on in the background is that you were going through a personal decision that you maybe didn't want to be an educator. So those were the two driving forces that led you to the decision of, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. What were your hopes at this point, if you remember? This is not a great question because it's like you've got the benefit of the time, you've already made the decision, but if you remember, what were you thinking and hoping would happen in good and in whatever way when you made the decision and the change to stop being a teacher?
I was hoping to create a business of my own somehow.
Okay.
I was working with a coach at the time, and I thought maybe briefly that I wanted to be a coach, but I didn't think I had enough life experience to be one.
It's
And
reasonable.
so I actually ended up being a VA for her in her business for a while I was kind of still figuring things out. She was more of a spiritual mentor at the time. So I was learning like tarot and Akashic records and kind of these more mystical sort of experiences that I could bring to people. And I was doing that also on the side. And I also enjoyed that.
Yep. What's not to love?
So it was that for a while. Then eventually I added emotional clearing to my toolkit. And so I started doing emotional clearing sessions and taking people through the spiral, which is a protocol for clearing emotional baggage and conditioning around the 22 most common human emotions. And I was enjoying that because I was really enjoying the interpersonal aspect, which I was missing from when I was teaching,
Sure.
because teaching is very interpersonal. You're constantly, in the difference being that it wasn't 35 people needing my attention all at once. So it was
Did you
very
have 35
different.
kids in the classroom?
Not every single class, but usually that after lunch crowd tended to be bigger than
That is so many. Wow. Okay. That is a lot of kids.
And it's a lot of energy for that. The after lunch crowd is always, they were just outside with their friends and talking and whatever. So getting them to settle and 35 of them all at once. Whoa.
It's a lot. All right. All right. So sorry, I cut you off. You're doing the emotional clearing and you're a VA for a coach, and it is a very common thing that people who are under the wing of a coach will entertain the idea of being a coach. And coach can mean a lot of things. It's a catch-all term that doesn't mean the same thing for every single time. It's really a title that we put on people when there's not a better word for what they're doing in a lot of ways, which is one of the things that makes it so confusing. And so you decided not to do that. But you knew you wanted to do something for yourself. What was the driver for wanting to do a business for yourself, if you had to describe it to people?
I think I was a little bit sick of other people telling me what to do.
Okay, fair enough. Let's call it autonomy and independence. There we go.
Okay, yes.
There
Those
we
are more
go.
adult terms for that.
What you decide not to, it sounds like you decided not to be a coach. What did you decide to go into? You were being a VA, and then what did you decide to do?
Well, I did end up deciding to be a coach,
Oh, okay. Sorry. I
which
made the
is,
wrong conclusion. Okay, so you go into coaching. All right, tell me more.
So it was a really windy road getting here, though, because then I spent time also copywriting. And so in my VA duties, I eventually evolved into more of a copywriter because she got so busy, she was no longer able to do her own social media posts and emails and all that stuff. So I took it on.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, I really enjoy doing this. Maybe I can get some copywriting clients. And I'm writing. Oh, wow. That's what I've always wanted to do since I was a kid. And it's been a really interesting journey because it's like I'm coaching, which to me is also like teaching
Can be, yeah.
sometimes, can be. And I'm writing, have some copywriting clients as well. And I'm infusing the mystical and magical aspects into it as well. So it's like all of this has come, this big mess, essentially, all came around full circle to me being able to just do a little bit of everything. And nobody tells me when to do it.
So now let's take a pause and let me ask you this. When you had, so teaching is still a very socially respectable job. There's a lot of support. When you tell somebody you're a teacher, it's not a controversial thing at all, right? It's been a job
Right.
for forever. Everybody knows what it is. It doesn't require a lot of explanation. Nobody questions it. It's got a lot of societal support. Who was the first person you told that you were going to not be a teacher, but instead you were going to be a coach? And how did that conversation go?
I told my partner,
Okay.
and she was just like, "Oh my gosh, yes, because you were always so tired and miserable when you
Oh,
got home."
very good. All right, very good. I love it. All right, excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. I love that that's how that went and that you got support. That is really good. Do you ever, was there a moment as you were going through this where you regretted walking away from teaching?
I mean, there's just the part of me that just, I miss the kids. All of them that I had at this point or have graduated high school. I have
Yeah.
no idea where they went, but every once in a while I'll be like, huh, wonder what Maria's doing right now. Like, how is
Sure.
she, it's a little harder to stay in touch because it's like once you leave the school, you don't have a classroom there anymore. So if they're walking home from their high school, they can't come visit you,
Sure.
I think that part is hard.
Is there anything that you miss about your Starbucks experience that do you ever regret, leaving that and taking the turn to go into education?
I miss getting free coffee on my shifts.
All right. That's totally
I
fair.
miss having the partner discount that like I could get a discount on all my drinks on any time I bought outside of my shifts.
Absolutely. No.
Starbucks was my first like entryway into coffee. I never drank coffee before I worked at Starbucks. And it's an expensive habit.
It
Or
sure
can be an
is.
expensive habit.
I worked in a coffee shop when I was straight out of college for about 6 months while I thought I was going to go to grad school, but I just got a job. And like you were describing, while I was there, I drank a lot of coffee. And I was already drinking coffee, but I drank a lot of coffee during the day because when people would mess up the drinks, you could have them, or it was just around all the time. And I will never forget when I made the jump from that job to the next job I took, the first couple of days in an office not being surrounded by espresso, they were rough. They were rough. Like, I did not realize how much coffee I was drinking and how much caffeine I was taking in. And I remember sitting at the desk being like, I may fall asleep just right now. Like, just right now, I may fall asleep. So it's a distinct thing. All right. So in a minute, we'll do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you are, like specifically what you do now and where people can follow, find you online and connect with you.
Yeah. So specifically right now, I am a self-love coach.
Very nice.
And that's just kind of the umbrella term that I found for everything that I do, all the different modalities and things. And yeah, because what's been the biggest kind of needle mover for me is learning to separate judgment, let go of judgment. Come into deep self-acceptance and letting everything be okay. It was really hard for me to let go of the judgment of going down so many different pathways. Because I was taught you get a job, you work that job for 30 years, you retire, and that's how life is. And when I wasn't living that reality, that was rough to let
Yeah.
go of and release finally. Yeah.
And what's so interesting about that is that I think a lot of us hear that or have that. I don't know if we hear it or we believe it or we just think that's the way it's supposed to be. I know very, very few people. There's some, right? There's some people who know they want to be surgeons at the age of seven. They have a path. They go on, right? So there are definitely some people who know from a very early age what they want to do. They don't ever steer off that path. But most of us don't. Most of the people I know have several pivots. And one of the things, and that's one of the through lines of why I make this show and why I do what I do, because I think we do a bad job of preparing people for walking that on their own. And when your expectations of what your life is going to be like do not match your lived experience, that is where insecurity and self-doubt and confusion all pop up. Like that's a crazy thing. And so I think that's a really, really good point. And that I totally am in alignment with the idea that self-love, self-compassion, kindness, those are building blocks for so, so many things. You have a wonderful gift to give to the audience, which is an Ignite Your Pleasure-Filled Life session, which is very, very cool. We'll put that in the show notes, and in the email that I send out to the subscribers. The easiest way to get those things is to be subscribed to the email community at imperfectadulting.com, because then you can just click on the link. And this one will take you to a fun quiz and then directly to how to get this session. Thank you for generously offering that to the audience.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for having me. I'm
But we're not done
excited.
yet. We're not done yet. We're ready for
Oh,
the
yeah.
final, the rapid fire questions. These are just for fun. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Have you ever been to a musical concert? And if so, what was the first concert you went to?
Like any type of artist?
Any type
You're
of
talking like
artist.
an
I just didn't,
orchestra? Like what are
could be
you?
anything. I didn't, it was like in my head, it's like a rock concert, but like as I was writing it, I was like, well, maybe they're not rock fans. So like any sort of, yeah. So like anything.
Oh, so when I was 10, I went to a Hanson concert.
Okay,
That
I love
was
it.
the best.
That was a big deal then. That was like, yeah,
Yes.
very good. I can see exactly how excited you would be about that. That's fantastic. All right, so I write these before I talked to you, so I didn't know that you were I didn't know what type of teacher you were or that you wanted to be an author, but do you read and or listen to books? And if so, what's the last book you read or listened to?
Yes, I usually have five or six going at the same time. I just finished the book Already Awake.
Okay.
It's basically the experience that we get to see through our identity, whatever it is, whatever we construct as being I. And
Okay. Like,
really
so
is no
we
I,
are.
there's no separation, there's no,
Yeah.
yeah.
We are the creators of our own universe. Like, our, like, they, so yeah, our perception creates. Yeah,
Kind of.
that's very cool. Very cool. Already awake. Very nice. Okay. So I think that a lot of adults happen to have quirky little skeletons in our closet. I'm not talking about big things. I'm talking about quirky little parts of our personality. P things that we've done and that we don't no longer do and stuff like that. What's one thing about you that when you meet a new person and they find out might surprise them when it comes up in conversation?
Oh, it might surprise, huh? I'm incapable of remembering to shut a cabinet door.
There you go. All right.
Partner
That's
walks into the
perfect.
kitchen and said, "Oh, did you unload the dishwasher? Because all the cabinets are open."
Oh, that is very funny. That I do not have that. I close all the cabinets. I close all the drawers. That is very, very true. There is that joke that goes around that in every household, there's one person that loads the dishwasher like an architect, like an engineer, and one that is like a feral raccoon. And I always laugh at that because I'm like, that is not the way it is in my house. We have all feral raccoons, like the stuff goes into the dishwasher, like it was just flung in by like a tornado. It's a miracle that I think comes out clean. But yes, that is the way it is in our house. Okay, that's it, Mallory Kirsten. Thank you so much for being a great guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Abvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.